Welcome to All the Smoke, a production of The Black Effect and iHeartRadio in partnership with Showtime.
Welcome back, man. Season 2 of All the Smoke.
We got a real special guest.
What's up with your Brody with the virtual handshake?
I'm gonna tell y'all something that I never told nobody.
I want All the Smoke.
Welcome back to another edition of All the Smoke. Jack, what's going on, bro?
My brother, we're back. What's going on?
Man, I can't call it, man. Just getting through the day. It's my week with the kids, so it's nonstop. Twins, Ashton running around the fucking house, opening everything. So got a little pit stop real quick to knock this interview out today, man. How's everything out there?
Man, everything's good. And speaking of Ash, you know, Sky's running around. But speaking of Ash, my man taking showers already?
Bro, it's crazy. It's crazy. He already? Like low-key, like he can't get the soap in his hand. But once I get the soap in his hand, he can rub it on his body. But he told me the other day, he said, Daddy, no. And like, shut the shit on me. Like, he loves, like, when I say this is shower time, this dude will, you know, make his way upstairs, fast up the stairs. You know how to take his diaper off, clothes off, and he's ready. So,
I saw it.
At least I know he's going to be clean. But anyway, man.
You're doing a great job, bro.
Man, appreciate that. Thank you very much. But we got, man, two-time NBA champ. If I'm not mistaken, the only person in the history of the NBA to win a ring with the Boston Celtics and the Los Angeles Lakers. Just recently signed a 2-year deal with the Atlanta Hawks. Welcome, man, Rajon Rondo.
Appreciate it. What's good, my guys? Y'all good?
What's up, Nine?
How are you? Yeah, we were supposed to do this interview last week, but he was on vacation. The Wi-Fi was spotty, so we had to push this. But I'm glad we finally were able to track you down. And
yeah, wherever you was, bro, you had some lions and tigers and bears chewing on a Wi-Fi card. I don't know where you were.
Yeah, it was horrible. So I'm glad we could reschedule and got this thing going today. Yeah.
Well, let's get to it. You know, you come off a championship with the Los Angeles Lakers. What year is this going? You're going into what year?
15.
Year 15. What was your deciding factor to go back to the Lakers or take a more lucrative deal with Atlanta?
Number one priority was family. So for me to be close to my family, more on the East Coast. And then obviously playing for a young organization, helping a lot of these young guys out. You know, they made a couple of them made a call. And, you know, once it was over as far as the free agency signing, they gave me a call and just told me how much they wanted me there and wanted to learn from me. So just glad that I made that decision.
Being able to be a veteran to Trae Young and going into this knowing how much you're going to mentor him, and us being players, we know the education you're going to give him. How inspiring, how excited are you to go in and be able to give that game to one of the stars, upcoming stars in the game?
I'm very excited. You know, we've been in the gym a couple of times already, just kind of picking each other's brain and getting up some shots together. So he seems like a sponge, and I'm ready to give him whatever I have. Obviously, trying to lead him to the best point guard he can possibly be, and just understanding different dynamics of the game. So I'm excited to teach him and all the other young guys as well.
But I think it's great too, from a standpoint of you're going to allow him to do more of what Steph gets to do, and which is play off the ball and come off screens and be able to catch the pick and roll off the side on the run instead of everyone loading up to him up top. So I think, obviously, similar to what I feel like CP is going to do with Devin Booker, you guys got two young monsters next to you, and I'm sure you guys are going to both enjoy, you know, that opportunity of passing all your knowledge of the game, because you're one of the greatest minds to ever play this game, man. So I'm excited, because I think low key Atlanta's done really well in free agency. To me,
yeah, they did.
Done really well.
Yeah, we definitely did. I would say that. So I'm excited. You know, I love the underdog mentality and being against all odds. So I'm looking forward to the challenge this year and getting us to where we need to be.
So are you guys are out in Atlanta now. You mentioned before, are you settled in yet? You ready? Because I mean, everything is right around the corner.
I'm not settled in yet, but I'm about a week away. Like I said, still getting everything down here close. Shipped from Cali, and I'm almost close.
What was it like, you know, as I mentioned at the top of the show, you won a championship for the Boston Celtics. You won a championship for the Los Angeles Lakers. Has it kind of sunk in yet? Obviously, you still have more time. And until I finished, I didn't really kind of look back at anything I had done. But has it kind of sunk in that you won a championship for the two greatest franchises in the sports history?
It's definitely sunk in. But, you know, as still being active right now, it's, you know, my main focus is obviously now going into the season so quickly is the Hawks and helping us grow as much as possible. But, you know, I see it. I hear it every day, understanding that what I've accomplished. But it still hasn't really hit it, sunk in for the most part. But I'm definitely aware and grateful for the opportunity to be able to just play this game for so long. And one of the two most storied franchises in history, you know, it's definitely a blessing to do what I did in my career so far.
What has it been like, you know, just being, you know, being a champion again? Like, you know, I got a chance to experience, Matt got a chance to experience, but being able to be back at the top, being at the mountaintop twice, you know, how does that feel the second go around?
For me, it's even better. You know, you obviously, guys, you saw it. It's a crazy quick story. When I won back in 08, Eddie Howson was always on the sidelines and around. And, you know, I was like, damn, that'd be dope. You know what I mean? Like, if I had the opportunity to do the same thing, you know what I mean? So I won the kids early. I had kids. My son is 9 now. And, you know, for him to be able to come experience that in the bubble, let alone rewinding back last year when I hit the game winning shot against the Celtics, he was there, you know, on the floor. So, you know, for him to be able to experience that, you know, full circle, like me manifest that, you know, 12 years later, you know, and it come full circle, it was definitely a surreal moment to be able to have him there with me celebrating my second championship. So winning one at 20, 21, now 34, you know, it's a big difference. You know, like I said, just having people around me that I love, being able to witness and experience that as well with me. So it's been a hell of a run. You know, leaving the bubble was, it is what it is. But after leaving, you know, I enjoyed myself with a nice vacation. We celebrated with the team. We kicked it with, you know, a couple of days and a couple of different cities, and you know, just enjoying life every moment.
You gotta blow that pitch up though. With you and your son on the court, that has to be
in the
house.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. If you ever decide to drop a little, like Meek did, a little quarantine pack of four songs, that got to be the cover. Yeah.
Hell yeah. That was dope. That was a beautiful picture. It's funny you said that because that was my best experience. Obviously, I got hurt going into the playoffs and didn't play as much, obviously, as I'd want to and when I won a championship. But the best thing was the Twins were there. So, you know, Steve Kerr let them fly on the plane, go to practice with us, be in the hotels, be in the locker room, be on the sideline. And when we had an opportunity to win it, these two little dudes are up next to Steph and Clay trying to hold the championship trophy and try to get the MVP trophy from KD. You know what I mean? Right. So that was the best moment. That's still, when I talk about it, what gives me chills about it is because that's something you can't pay for. That's something you can't, unless you're in the moment, you'll never understand what it means to that kids. And a little side note, I think a great thing, your son is the same age the Twins were when we won it, and I got them championship rings for Christmas, and they lost their minds. So I know they may replica little rings, too, if you need an idea for a Christmas present. Just want to throw that out there.
Absolutely. All right. Yeah, y'all already hit Jason. Like, line them up. Yeah.
That's what's up. Yeah. You mentioned real quick, which I thought was interesting because we haven't really talked about this, was leaving the bubble. What was it like – going back into society? Because you guys, I mean, although you had an injury, you went and then you left and then you came back, but after being in the bubble, just the whole overall process, what was it like leaving?
It was definitely different. You know I'm able to always adjust in my environment wherever the case may be, so I kind of got right back to it. Went home with the kids for a couple of weeks. Actually went to Miami and chilled for a couple of days, went back to LA and just kept it moving. You know what I mean? I'm really a homebody, so got the kids around, went to the house. Obviously, during COVID, you can't do much anyway. So we kind of just chilled and relaxed, got in some water, and then I took my vacation. So I was right back to it. And like you said, I was home for 6 weeks, so I didn't have to go through as much as my teammates did. So, you know, I was, you know, in a certain sense, you know, I was kind of blessed as far as I had to go through it, endure that long time. I think it was 102-103 days. Mm-hmm. So I got to go home, come back, and it's kind of just lock in and go from there. Just focus on the goal.
Kind of got to restart. I don't know if it was rumors or not, but I heard you had questioned even coming back after that thumb injury. Was that rumors or was that true? Or
I wasn't even thinking about going into the bubble initially. That was a thought in my mind during the quarantine times. Like I said, just wanted to be closer to my fam. But after I broke my thumb, I didn't have doubts, it's not that I didn't want to come back. It was just a matter of, you know, this is my third surgery on my right hand in 2 years, you know what I mean? So it was kind of understanding, like, I got to figure out what's my bone density in my hands. Like, so I got to think differently of how I got to protect my body and, you know, be able to, you know, withstand whatever, you know, I endure.
To me, you consider, you know, we got a little segment where we talk about the point guards, and we call them point guards. And you a point guard, you fall into that point guard category. What was it like bringing point guard Rondo, playoff Rondo, back in the bubble?
It was amazing. It was an unbelievable feeling. You know, just the mindset and the mentality that I had going into the bubble. I was able to completely focus everything I had into the game. I limited my distractions. And like I said, being in a bubble helped, you know what I mean? Like, it's so much we can do. You know, I'm not really a gamer. I started actually when I come back from breaking my hand, I started a game with the guys, but when we lost our first game, I was pissed and I couldn't really focus on gaming anymore. So, you know, I was kind of locked in with the game plan and understanding what we can do to win and dominate the game. So for me, it was just a straight mentality just to, you know, try to get it done. That was the goal going into the season. That was the expectations for me and what I had for the team. And we all had the same goal. So our attention to detail, what Frank was able to do with us in the bubble. And like I said, during film, how guys were able to learn so quickly on the fly without even going through it on the court, really. You know what I mean? We have a 5-10 minute walkthrough, but it was light. You know, we had on hoodies, flip-flops. Like, it wasn't, you know what I mean, like a taped walkthrough or anything like that. Like I said, we was picking it up on the fly, going to the game and making quick adjustments.
Do you like when they call you Playoff Rondo? Like, you're someone different?
See, Max, I did the first thing, I think, and Max, he broke it down differently on why people consider that. But my main thing is, you know, and when you have a couple of days of rest, you have a couple of days of preparation, being able to lock in on one team, you know, I think, you know, everybody can elevate their game in a sense. You know, it's about the dedication or the knowledge of the game to some levels. But when you got those things that come into play, it's easy. And also, you know, during the playoffs, if you look at my career, I pretty much got more time in the playoffs. And I believe that's when coaches allow me to, you know, I would say, like Isaiah said, be a magician with the ball and manipulate the game, put people in spots to where I know a guy's going to make a mistake weak side and I can, you know, put my best shooter there if I want to get him a shot. So it's just, I feel like that's what coaches then allow me to do in the playoffs, is just be me. And they understand at that point, it's like, okay, cool. He wants the same thing I want, is a win. You know what I mean? That's the only thing that matters. So, you know, I think they give me more leeway to manipulate the game and make me you know, have an impact on the game.
That's what I get out of it when they say Playoff Rondo, because I know the difference between me in the regular season and the playoffs. And I know your mind is being one of the, you know, you and Chris Potter, smartest point guards in the game. I know your mind works different in the playoffs because every game counts. And we know you only got to be the best team in this series for 4 games. You know what I'm saying? Right. So you locked in and you see different things to get these teams. So I understand when they call you Playoff Rondo, because I know your IQ probably goes up 10 times higher in the playoffs.
But, you know, being able to, you know, work with, you know, a lot of great minds this year, you know what I mean? I was a sponge as well. You know, a lot of people always say, I don't want to be the smartest in the room. You know what I mean? Like, I got to surround myself next to Bron, you know, Frank Vogel, Phil Handy, Jay Kidd, Mike Pemberthy. Like, it's just a lot of great minds that, you know, I'm like, give me everything you got. Like, shit, critique me, critique us. Like, what's your mindset? So, you know, in the future, you know, you never know where I want to be down the line as coaching or GM, whatever the case may be. It's like, I want to know, you know, what the greats' mindsets are and how they think.
Yeah, that's where you belong.
That for sure. That's iron sharpening iron. But I wanted to touch on, you know, going into a locker room with Bron, seeing that you guys are natural born leaders, your guys' mindset, the attention to detail, your discipline, your hunger to win. What was it like collabing, you know, obviously with one of the greatest players of all time from a mental standpoint?
It was a hell of an experience. You know, like I said, he was very vocal this year in film, as far as helping the young guys understand what they need to be and where we need to be as a team. So I was learning on the fly on the court, you know, just picking his brain, studying him, his body of work, the way he moves. When I go back and watch film, I used to always watch film of myself, and then I watch film of him, AD, you know what I mean, just understanding where they want the ball, where they're great at. So that's just kind of how my mindset was going into it, like I said. But to be able to play with him and pick his brain daily and understand his discipline of what he's done to be able to become, you know, so dominant in year 17. It was fun to watch. It was great to be next to and understanding, like, okay, this is elite. You know, I played with so many elite players at a high level. Damn near, I would say more than 15 first ballot Hall of Famers. So, you know, to see the best, it was a hell of a ride these last couple of years, just, you know what I'm saying, just watching them.
You came in and picked up where you left off, which was crazy to me. After 6 week off and a broken thumb, a third surgery on the same hand. Tell me what it was like being a younger player in the playoffs, and then your mentality as a 15-year vet or a 14-year vet and coming back and knowing exactly where you need to be and how you can affect the game in the most, because you put up solid numbers, but just your presence on the court allowed LeBron to kind of exhale a little bit, and you were able to run the show on both sides of the floor.
Well, I mean, like I said, that's, you know, to sum it up, really, that's just about trust. You know what I mean? Like, LeBron was able to trust me, and I told him, you know what I mean? Like, I got you. You know what I mean? I damn sure don't want to let anybody down, myself down, but I'm not going to let anybody down. It's, I'm going to make mistakes, but, you know, if I make a mistake, I'm probably going to make up for it two times in the next 2 or 3 minutes. So it's just, that was just my mindset and just having energy and want to become, you know, the best player on the court. You know, even with him on the court, my mindset is to be the best player on the court at all times. And I was able to do that, like I said, with trust of my teammates and my coaching staff. So I have to give them credit. But just having a mindset, like I said, when I was 21 in the playoffs going at it, you know, I had three greats. You know, a lot of other great teammates. But I had three greats behind me, and I knew they had my back from day one. So I did have to earn their respect, which, you know, was obviously expected, which was not a problem. But having them behind me, understanding, like, you know, they gave me leeway. You know, they pumped the confidence in me. I saw those guys work at an early age, and it was only right that I follow suit. You know what I mean? Like I said, having that competitive drive, wanting to win, I was able to learn, you know, some of the things I had and put it with theirs and just pick each one of their brains, you know, the P.J. Browns, Keon Dewey. Like, I had a lot of great vets, Sam Cassell, Tyronn Lue. So they were on me daily, and they helped me grow. And then fast forward 14 years later, you know what I mean, I was able to just come back, you know, by the grace of God. You know, like I said, I broke my hand. And then I was supposed to play in the Portland series. 30 minutes before tip-off, my back locked up. I'm out another week. So I missed that series completely. So I'm thinking, like, damn, you know, I've been out for 7 months. I'm coming right back in the heat. So I had to bring in this understanding, like I said, make sure my body was right. I still could lift. Even though I broke my thumb, I was on it daily, lifting. I was doing yoga, you know, every other day, just trying to lock in and make sure my body was right coming back so I don't have any lower extremity, you know, mess up. So that was just my mindset. That's it.
I love hearing that. But take me back to 20, 21-year-old Rondo being the floor general to win your first championship in Boston with, you know, like you said, the likes of Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen, Paul Pierce. You guys had a hell of a team. I think Tony Allen was on that team too, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
T.A., you guys had a lot of different personalities, but you were the one, you were the, you know, from the outside looking in, you were the pulse of the team, but you were only – you were the youngest at the same time. So what was it like navigating that team, and what did you learn from actual on-the-court experience and then also having Doc next to you? Because, you know, I've personally, you know, Doc would tell stories how you guys would butt heads sometimes because you see things one way, he sees things one way. So get into that shit for us.
So, shit, let's start with the Doc. Let's start with Doc.
Yeah.
Man, my first year, you know, we lost 18 straight at one point. I'm like, man, what the fuck? You're like, I can't get no burn. You know what I mean? I ain't even get me in the game. He's just, I don't know. I'm going to get into a little bit. I'm going to go crazy on it. We should get into it, basically. So fast forward, the trade happened, you know, the same year, 7 players go. KG, I heard KG said he wanted me to stay. So boom, we win a championship. But throughout that year, it was tough, yo. But Doc helped me get through it, obviously, understanding, you know, I think he played with 2 Hall of Famers at the time and just how to navigate and keep those guys happy. You know, I think I'm blessed and fortunate. Like I said, I played baseball, football, basketball, all 3 growing up. So I kind of had that leader mentality, leader mindset growing up as far as just being a believer and being a student of the game, whatever I wanted to accomplish. And that'll show those guys or earn their respect, you know, back with my knowledge and my work ethic. You know, you can't deny me. Or you can't, you know, not hand me the keys. And, you know, giving them granted, they didn't, you know, necessarily obviously want to give me the keys at first. I had to earn their respect. I did that throughout the season. They instilled trust in me. I communicated to my guys all the time on the court. You know what I mean? Like, I pride myself on having the most touches. There's a stat back in the day when Steve played, and I think 1 year he had beat me in most touches with his teammates. You know what I mean? As far as, like, coming back, running back on defense touch or coming out of timeouts touch, like, you know, that mindset, you know, also helped me kind of earn their respect and just the gathering that I could probably kind of bring teams together.
I don't mean to cut you off, but see, that's how you set them apart. Who thinks about stuff like
that?
That's
crazy, bro? Right? I love hearing this shit. I love hearing this shit. I love it.
Damn, that's crazy. I didn't even know that was a stat.
Yeah, it was a stat. I saw Steve beat me 1 year. I was like, damn, that motherfucker beat me. I mean, like, that's just, like I said, how I am. But it wasn't forceful. Like I said, it's always, you know, me being the point, you know what I mean? Like, everybody runs past the point guard, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, like, okay, good shot, good deed. Way to set that pick. Like, just, you know, positive encouragement and talking to my team to where, you know, we feel confident about what we're doing and we're ready to lock the fuck in. Everybody know what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Only stat Jack knew was motherfucking FGAs.
FGA. Speaking of that, though, that's what Danny, that's the key thing Danny told me game 6 back in 08. He was like,
oh, and T's
tonight. FGAs. He said, put them up against Kobe. He said, put them mm-hmm. up. No matter mm-hmm. how you play, you got to be aggressive. I ended up shooting 21 field goals at that game.
See, I remember that, though, because I obviously, you know, being in the league the same times, I remember Kobe used to play you under the free throw line sometimes. You right. know what I mean? And right. and it kind of clogged the defense up for everyone else for all the curls and all the shit in the paint. And it took you to be more aggressive for him to come out and motherfucking guard you.
Right. So he was the first to do that. Then, obviously, he set the trend. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. A couple years later, I think Brown was playing me like that in the playoffs. And I mean, they put a bigger mm-hmm. guard on me, that type mm-hmm. of mentality. So I was like, okay, cool. I got to figure out how to dissect this. I got, you know, this is playoff. Okay, I get it. Okay, now mm-hmm. I got to elevate. Because I think throughout the playoffs, no one had played me that way. And then Kobe, you know, that's why, you know, rest in peace, one of the greats. And I love competing mm-hmm. with him because he understood the mindset of the game and just how to, you know, it was a chess match out there. And I love playing against it with him, you know. And also, you know, obviously, I got to give Phil Jackson credit as well.
What is it about, like, you and, like, J. Kidd, like, even J. Kidd, like, y'all wasn't shooters now. Now they can't leave y'all open.
That's what he tell me too. But now, this, you know, just working and not giving a fuck. You know what I mean? Shit.
But on some real shit, that not giving a fuck meter has to be really high. And to me, that's the only thing holding Ben Simmons back right now is that I don't give a fuck meter. And once you get over that I don't give a fuck meter, you good.
The crazy part is you look around the league, this nigga shooting 3-for-17. I'm like, what the
Come
fuck?
Come on,
like,
for real?
This nigga, they say he's
more. Shit go. Oh,
okay, bet. All right, okay, cool. Yeah. All right, let me get up 12-3. Nigga, I'm going to fire five of them motherfuckers, too. What you talking about?
Shit. Yeah, exactly.
For real. But you got to get over that, though. Like you said, was it difficult for you to get over that? You embraced it right away because you are a pass first type of guy. So was it hard for you to actually take that mentality on?
It was, you know, still at times, you know, it's just my mindset is always thinking open man. But, you know, the way the game is played today, the way I'm able to stay in the league now, like I said, they've been telling me I got to take it. So. Like I said, I'm looking for that motherfucker. I'm trying to get him up. You know what I mean? I ain't got nothing to lose. You know what I mean? I'm going to make an impact on the game so many other ways. So, fuck it. I get 3D, bitch. Just on.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go back to Bron, Rondo. Give me one thing that you can say you actually learned from the Kang. I call him the K-A-N-G. The Kang.
One thing I actually learned. As far as game wise, like we're talking about,
or just something you previously didn't know about him. You know what I mean? Like you hear a lot of different things. Like, what is something you learned from him that you just didn't know? Like, damn, okay.
I mean, I'm gonna have to say it's discipline. Mm-hmm. I just think it's discipline, yo. Like I said, he got the best guy working on his body in the game, and everything he do is, you know, is routine, you know, strategically routine, as far as rest, diet. You know what I mean? Like, from top to bottom. Only person other than that was KG. But, like I said, LeBron, is the way he's daily doing exactly what he needs to be doing is unmatched. So it's
it
like
shows.
I can tell you that, but you can't really understand it until you, like, see it. Like, damn, like, I see him every day, like, and he ain't taking no shortcuts. Like, shit, he own it. Locked in.
Love it. So. Putting them days together. What was it like going from being a Boston Celtic to winning a championship for the Lakers the year Kobe passes?
It was a lot. This is the emotional roller coaster year. Winning it, you know, for Kobe, the year Kobe passed is unreal. It's something you couldn't imagine. Obviously, me playing against him a couple finals, you know, in the same uniform. So it was a tough one. So we all understood the mindset and the goal of what we had, what we were trying to attain and who we were doing it for. So to be able to, you know, kind of, like I said, say that and full circle, accomplish your goal, it was a real moment. And it's definitely something we, you know, we'll be grateful for, I'm sure, the rest of our life. So it was a dope moment. It's been a dope moment despite everything else, you know what I mean, just being able to share some light in that aspect.
Yep. I mean, it's been amazing. To me, you know, people talk about this should be an asterisk. To me, this should be a gold star, considering what the world was going through, what you guys had to go through to get in the bubble and stay safe and still carry your message and still be away from your family. To me, the game is 90% mental. Once you get to this level, everyone can pretty much do everything. So who mentally, like you said, with bronze discipline, or who can really lock in for this time and understand the task at hand? So for all those people that say, oh, this is an asterisk, this shit, man, fuck that. It's got to be a gold star, considering how fucked up a year 2020 has been as a whole.
Absolutely. I can't wait to wear my ring. I'm just going to wear more than I wore my last one. Wear both of them, really.
Yeah, yeah. I saw Bron, he did an interview with Richard Jefferson not too long ago, and he said the one thing he was disappointed was not being able to party with his teammates. Obviously, he said, you know, the locker room is cool, the parade is cool for the fans, but then, and I heard before this, you guys are a really close team. You guys moved as a unit. So how disappointing was it for you, even though you're an old, wily vet and you want to sit at home with the family, to not be able to party with your team, you know, when you win a championship? Because those, obviously, them shits don't come around all the time.
That's the time to turn up.
That's the right time. You get passed. Everybody get a pass. You could turn
right
up.
Man.
So, it was, it wasn't what you would expect. It was difficult. You know, you just got to appreciate what we did. You know, we didn't get the opportunity to kind of go crazy and celebrate it due to the situations. But, you know, that's just how 2020's been. You know, it's just you roll with the punches, like I said, as far as up and downs. You take your wins when you can, and understand, you know, some things are uncontrollable. So, we'll reunite. You know what I mean? Like, shit, we still out here. So, and it's something they can never take away from us. So it might not be ideal right after the chip championship celebration, but we'll figure some shit out. And a lot of guys we got on this team, you know, we can make some moves.
Growing up in Louisville, Kentucky, multi-sport athlete. Similar to me, didn't really tune in to basketball until I got older. Like, I watched the Lakers, but outside of that, I wasn't really following college basketball, no hoop like that. I was just out there playing sports. When did basketball become serious to you?
It became serious to me probably with my senior year at Oak Hill. You know what I mean? Like, I played multi-sports growing up. I take that back. It might have been serious. Maybe junior. I say junior, I would say. But I still didn't know, you know what I mean? I had an opportunity to kind of get to the league, but I understood that, I had a mentor growing up that I met when I was like 15 years old, Derek Anderson. When I met him, like I said, I'm from Kentucky, so I didn't watch basketball growing up. I didn't watch football. Like, I was outside playing. So we didn't have a professional team in Louisville, and I was just always outside active, so I didn't grow up a fan of anybody or anything. And like I said, once I met him, he exposed me to a lot of a different life, basically. You know, he picked me up. I was like, that's all we doing is chilling. He worked out 2-3 hours in the morning. The rest of the day, he got chill. I'm like, damn, this is what you're doing? Like, you who? Like, yeah, we drive to a big-ass crib. I'm like, damn, nigga, you doing it? Like, you got 7 cars. I'm like, okay, the life. Chill, okay, cool. Work out, hoop. Let me focus on, let me lock in and try to get, you know, go this way. Because, to that point, I was just out here, you know, with being 15, 16-year-old kid. You know what I mean? No really goal. Just got a lot of kids in the neighborhood. We kicking and we doing whatever we doing, trying to get through school. So once I met him, my high school coach, Doug Bibby, flew me out to Sacramento to start working out with Mike Bibby. So I'm like, okay, cool. These niggas think I can hoop. You know what I mean? I'm over playing ones against these niggas. They ain't killing me too much. See what I got. Let me focus a little bit more. Then I went to Oak Hill Academy. I got my boy, my brother to this day, Josh Smith. And the league, they coming to scout him. The league coming to see this nigga. I'm like, shit, they coming to see him. You know, we had ones every day going at it in practice. I'm like, shit, I can keep up with this nigga. He just, you know, 6'8", a freakish athleticism, but, you know, I got some shit too. So once they started looking at him as the league, I kind of was like, oh, I can get this. I can go get it. You know what I mean? That's kind of my mindset. That's when I really kind of locked in. My senior year, I went from damn near ranked 128 to Megan McDonald's my senior year. And then it was on ever since. I mean, I got matched up with a couple, you know, Sebastian Tilford, Sean Livingston. We had, I think, one of the best McDonald classes of all time. I'm arguing that with anybody. So class 04, you know, I think we had 13, 14 go out of the league, straight out of the league, and go to the league. So, once I got to that point, I was like, it's on. I was pissed, really. I had to go to school. Everybody, all niggas went out of high school. I'm like, damn, I ain't even no good. I'm going to Kentucky. But I'm like, shit, everybody went to the league. So I had to go to school for a couple years. And, you know, here we are.
It's funny you say something about Oak Hill, because my going into my junior year, you know, after winning the state championship in Texas, I started getting the name for myself. And I started, you know, looking at basketball more serious. But once I got to Oak Hill and I got a chance to experience traveling all around the country, playing against the top players and holding my own, I think that's what made it real for me. You know what I'm saying? Because before I got to Oak Hill, I never thought about making the McDonald's game. You know, I had a dope class too. Kobe, Jermaine O'Neal, Tim Thomas, Rip Hamilton. I had Mike Bibby. I had a dope class too. But going to Oak Hill made me realize that I could make it. You know what I'm saying? I heard you kind of speak on that earlier.
Absolutely. Same. Likewise. Exactly. Like I said, when I got to Oak Hill, got to Josh, we played 44 games that year. Like 37 were on the road. You know what I mean? So that was just already getting a set. If we did, like most of us did go to college, you know, had that mindset to still be able to do academics on the road and then make sure you get your grades working to hoop. So we were prepared for it, you know, at a young age. You know, the hardest part was just living on the hill. Shit.
Man, I'm talking about girls on one side, dudes on one side. You can't cross the line. Yeah, gun line, boss. You get caught with a girl, you suspended. You get caught with a girl, you suspended off the rip. No questions asked.
Right.
Bro, that's crazy.
I made it happen, though, Matt. I made it happen, Matt.
All right, if any motherfucker sneak a bitch and have her underneath the bed, it would have been you. But anyway, back to business. What was the recruiting process like? You chose Kentucky. You played for Tubby Smith. Did anyone else get a real consideration, or being, you know, born and raised from there, that's where your mind was from the beginning?
No, actually, I got an offer from Louisville my junior year before I went to Oak Hill, and I said, no, I'm going to wait. So a lot of people thought, but you don't ever offer me, but I'm like, you know, it didn't really make a difference. I kind of wanted to wait to see where I was at once I got to Oak Hill. So I had about 5 visits set up. I never took none of my visits. And being at Oak Hill, you know, I was like 10-hour drive from the crib. And my mom was, you know, my number one fan. So I wanted to be close to her, you know what I mean? Like going away from Oak Hill, I miss home like crazy. And I wanted her to be able to come travel and see me. So Kentucky had, I think, 4 or 5 seniors leaving that year. I had the opportunity to come in and start right away. And shit, it was close to the crib. And we had, like, I think, number 2 recruiting class coming in. We had Randolph Morris, Joe Crawford, Ramel Bradley. Chuck Hayes was there already, Clint Isabuki. So I was like, shit, you know, we can go ahead and rock it out and figure, you know, try to get to the league from there. Biggest platform.
Mm-hmm. How was it being a part of that Kentucky legacy?
Man, it's still to this day. You know what I mean? Like, it's unreal that I played for, arguably in basketball, 3 of the most storied franchises. You know what I mean? Like, it's I'm recognized all over.
I mean, right behind UCLA, but I feel you. Go ahead. Hey. No, we ain't done shit lately. No, it's definitely Kentucky now. I mean, UCLA is played out, unfortunately, but it's definitely Kentucky is the mecca for college basketball now. That's for sure.
And point guard academy.
Right. Right.
Y'all ain't been shit since the O'Bannon brothers.
Man, you ain't lying. Absolutely right. Now, Russ and Kevin Love and them had their nice little run, but never won a championship. Like, we ain't won a championship since 95.
Drew was on that team, wasn't he?
I think Drew was a little older. It was Darren Collison, Russell Westbrook. Kevin Love. They had a good team, but could never get over the hump. And then we had a dope team too, but our coach was like only a couple years older than us. Lav had just like turned 30, so that motherfucker was out trying to chase hoes just like we were. So we had like 9 pros or 8 pros go pro off our team, but we didn't win shit.
Oh my god, this dude is sick.
So
man.
you decided to make that jump. The Knicks passed on you at 20 and you went 21 to the Suns. Did playing and being in but did being a Knick ever cross your mind in the thoughts of what it would be like to be a point guard for that? It is a historical franchise, even though they haven't done nothing in a long time, but just thinking to, like, changing the culture and their mentality, did that cross your mind seeing that they were right there?
No. Not initially. Not at all. I didn't give a damn where I went. I was on my name to be called. It's so crazy because the nigga that went in front of me, the dude went in front of me, his name is Ronaldo Balkman.
That's who got knocked out by Melo, right?
They said the R. I was like, okay, what the fuck? You know what I mean? So they got me. I thought I was ready to get picked by them.
Oh, no, that wasn't. He was just on the team. My bad.
24-win season. Then it all changes summer when you get KG and Ray Allen. Y'all bounce back. Tell me what happened. Tell me how the team changed when y'all had those guys. Of course.
I mean, it was from jump. You know, it was the chemistry from jump. I think those guys came in. We all came in about maybe 3 weeks earlier than camp and started the hoop. And from the first game of pickup, the biggest difference I noticed was KG yelling. You know, I'm up top on the ball. He's yelling, screen, screen, screen. I'm like, damn, this nigga ain't even nowhere near me yet. So I was like, it was a different, you know. It was this easy playing with him. You know what I mean? Like, he told you where to be, what was happening behind you. And if you got a guy behind you, just to be able to talk,
man,
you know.
Your eyes. You need your eyes. People
game
understand
is easy,
that.
So he was able to, you know, quarterback me through that. And that, from that moment on, I knew, like, this shit was on. You know what I mean? Just having a guy that can quarterback behind me versus me not being always on back line, having to say shit. Like, I had a big fella that knew the game as well. So having him behind me, being able to quarterback it. And then, like I said, it goes along with our work ethic. You know, we went to Rome right away. That helped from jump. You know, we got our chemistry from day one. Going on a trip overseas where shit, you don't have anybody to talk to but yourself. Everybody's speaking a foreign language. We got into there. We were able to lock in and just understand what we were trying to accomplish that year. And the mentality and that mindset for me, being able to experience that, being around the great leadership, and when they brought in Sam Cassell, one of my closest coaching staff buddies was Armand Hill. You know, he's still with Dodgers.
Armand Hill. Hey, did he used to motherfucking take it? Did he used to take his shoes off and everything and sit on them hot packs? That was old dude from the Lakers with Phil Jackson. My bad, Armand. But Armand was cool, real cool dude.
Hey, you know, KG said the same thing when he was on the show. He was like, from that first practice, how we competed, how he felt like everybody was on the same page and came in to work. He said the exact thing, bro. He said from that first practice, he knew that y'all had something special.
Man, we used to dog it, yo. We used to have it called G-Unit runs. That's when you play one-on-one and you couldn't call a foul. You know what I mean? Like, it was just like, we weren't going crazy, but it was like, nigga, ain't no soft-ass foul. They was playing. Like I said, bigs would line up on one end and the guards line up on the other end. We would go at it. You know, we was playing ones before the games. So...
Speaking of KG, you know, obviously to land him was huge. He was talking about other teams and possible situations where he went. But when we interviewed him on the show, and I quote, he said, "You got to keep the little African kid, yo. If I come to Boston, you got to keep the African kid."
Yeah, he keeps telling that sorry ass story.
He keeps saying that shit.
Yeah, that's his truth. That's his truth, though.
Yeah. Hey, but he said, I mean, but to hear that, it is what it is. But to know someone of Kevin Garnett's caliber knew that you were a young and up and coming main piece for that team. How did that make you feel? I'm sure that had to give you a lot of confidence.
Oh, definitely a lot. You know, like I said, it was so crazy that I was sitting at the crib at my mom's house in Kentucky when the trades were happening. I think it was before the draft. And like I said, my name was on the board the first 2 days. Along with, you know, six other guys. I'm like, damn, I'm going to Minnesota. I'm like, fuck. But I'm like, I said, I asked to get out of here. You know what I mean? Because I was trying to get out of here my rookie year. Doc ass wasn't playing me. I was trying to get up out of there. So I was like, okay, cool. Trade happened. If I trade, it happens to happen. 2 days passed. Danny called me like, you ain't going nowhere. So I said, cool. I locked back in with Boston. And I, you know, not knowing that KG was like, nah, get him out of there. Keep him here. You know what I mean? So that changed my career path right there.
What is your heritage? What does the name Rajon Rondo come from?
Rajon, my mama just made the shit up. You know what I mean? This is a unique name that I appreciate to this day. So it ain't nothing. I think my uncle's name is Roderick, and I think she wanted an R or something. It's just made up.
That shit was made. Talk to us a little bit. You guys had a run. You guys won a championship. Obviously, the first taste of the Lakers-Celtics rivalry. You guys got a chance to play against each other a few times. What was it like to be a 21-year-old point guard in the midst of the most historical rivalry in the game?
I was just locked into the moment. You know, it was a surreal moment understanding the history because the Celtics hadn't won, you know, since I was born. I think it was 20 years, you know, prior to us getting there or being back into the championship. So. I had to watch a lot of tape and just understand, like, you know, all the greatness that I'm pretty much a part of now and understand how big the rivalry was. And I didn't realize until, you know, the NBA Finals or the media hit. You know, once the media was there, it was like, damn, this is the real deal. And then all the tension and reporters from different countries, you know, at the event, it was like, this is bigger than I imagined. So it was dope at 21 just to be able to go through that. And then being, you know, playing for Boston, you know, I still say the best fans and, you know, one of the best fans that I've ever played for in those arenas. So they know the game. They're amazing fans. And it was just, like I said, great being in that town at the time, Title Town.
Mm-hmm. You and Jack both won at young ages. You guys both had big closeout game six. What was your experience like closing someone out on the biggest stage, Rondo? And then I want to compare it to, you know, I want Jack to talk about his experience as well. Because for young players, a lot of motherfuckers ain't got them kind of balls.
Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking dominate. Like I said, Danny came to me before game six and was like, I don't give a fuck what you do. He was like, get him up. I said, what? Get him up. All right, cool. Say no more. So I just kind of went in the mentality, like I said, and just shot the ball. And I knew that aggressive play, well, I intended and hoped that that aggressive play would propel us to get a victory. And like I said, we beat the shit out of another year. So it was an all-around team effort.
So. I think for me, and it was similar, you know, to Rondo, I'm pretty sure, but just having Tim Duncan have the confidence in me. I think for me not playing, to me starting, to me getting all those shots and making big shots, it all started and had something to do with Tim. And when you got the best player believing in you, you got the best player telling the coach that you need to start, you got the best player coming to you, believing you to throw you the pass at the end of the game, that boosts your confidence. So for me, right, having Tim to have my back and let me know that I belong in this game, that I belong on this team, that I'm a big part of this team, that's what helped me as a young guy. So anytime you have a young guy that you know that they're going to be a big part of your team, it's imperative that the star players give them that confidence.
Mm-hmm. Talk about it. What was the process of growing? Because you had to grow fast and learn fast. And when would you say, like, you were kind of handed the keys to the car, you know, along with three Hall of Famers that are rolling with you?
Handed the keys? I think I kind of gained them throughout the playoffs, that first year of playoff run we had. You know, we had a tough battle against the Hawks. You know, I mean, we went 7-7, 6-6, I think. I think at the time it was the most, you know, games played to win the championship, some shit like that, like 26 games. So, you know, we were battle tested. You know, shit, I pretty much played every game seven. You know what I mean? I think I had impact in those game seven. I think it just grew, you know, going into the playoffs that year. You know, everybody understanding their role. You know, I wanted to be the best role player possible and make my guys' job easy. You know, that was just my mindset going into the game. Whatever I can do to make y'all shit easy. You know what I mean? If you're shooting 52%, I want to get it to 55%. You know what I mean? Just little things like that as far as just having them understand that, you know, I want the best for them. So it wasn't a problem. They gave me the keys. Doc gave me the keys. And it was through time, through film, through working, through a lot of criticism. Like I said, shit, even when we won it, me and Doc still was butting heads. Me and Doc probably bumped heads the first 4 or 5 years. You know what I mean? It was just point guard, understanding game from what I saw, what he saw. So it wasn't nothing. It was something, if I coach, I look forward to doing as well. You know what I'm saying? Just teaching the game, understanding the game with what my point guard sees or the guy I'm helping or even Trey this year. You know what I mean? I love it. I'm going to enjoy picking his brain, understanding like what he sees and how I can help, you know, get him, you know, whatever level he's trying to get to, which is probably the best. So I look forward to that. So just having those vets, man, it was big in the locker room for me.
Coming off that, you guys had a big 2010 run, knocking Wade off, Bron, our Orlando team, to get to a reach match with the Lakers.
Did we sweep y'all? What was that with you?
Nah, remember, so man, who was I talking to about this? Was it Vince? I was pissed because we had beat y'all 3-1 that season, and we got going into the Eastern Conference Finals, and Stan got scared, like, yo, this is a veteran team. We got to change up this, and that.
Switch the whole game plan.
Man, so y'all was up 3. Remember, you guys were up 3-0, and then we won 2 in a row, and then y'all beat us in game 6. Bullshit. Right. So we thought we was going to the finals that year. But anyway, you guys whooped our ass. And we talked to Paul Pierce, obviously, last year on the show, and he said that Game 7 loss in 2010, he still hasn't been able to watch. How tough was that after tasting it the year before, getting back and then not getting a chance to taste it again?
It was difficult. It was, you know, something that plays in my mind as far as whenever I watch the finals, you know, understanding, like, shit, we were up 3-2, you know what I mean, with 2 games to go, like, we didn't get the job done, so... You know, I don't try to live in the past too much, but understanding what I had and how precious it is to get to the finals and not taking that for granted because, you know, you can, even if you get there, you still can be up in a series and lose a motherfucker. So it was like, that was just my mentality coming into this year, understanding like, shit, we gave these boys life, you know, when the Heat won their first game. So understanding like, I've been up in the finals and it ain't, you know, coming back and losing it, bitch, ain't what you want to be. It ain't what you want to live with. So You know, I think maybe, you know, that helped me, inspire guys or to bring a little bit more this year in the finals. But nevertheless, it's still something in your mind. You know, I've been in the finals three times, one, two. You know, it's not a bad, but understanding we were up. We were up even going into the fourth. That's the crazy part. Mm. We were up going into the fourth and, you know, still took the L. But like I said, key role players made plays. They stepped up and won the championship. It's going to take everybody.
You've mentioned Doc a couple times in this interview. How instrumental or how much did you learn from him in your early years to kind of shape who you are as a floor general and as a man?
Man, he was big in my life, on and off the court. You know, whatever I had problems, anything I was going through, whatever we were going through on the court, you know, it never wavered how, you know, our relationship was off the court. So, you know, he was definitely big as, you know, being a black male mentor in my life. At 20 years old, coming to the game, understanding, you know, what I needed to be, become a great young point guard that he, you know, was, or how he played back in the day as far as, you know, how he was able to impact the game. So I was fortunate. I was lucky, man. Like I said, I always say, you know, you're as good as your coach believes in you in certain sports and pretty much every sport. And he gave me the keys. Like I said, we bumped heads, you know, a couple of years in a row, but it was still as far as a mentality of him wanting the best for me. And I'm appreciative to understand that I got fortunate to play for a coach like Doc. You know, I could have been with 10 other coaches, and shit, I could have been out of the league. You know what I mean? If I got with Rick Carlisle ass, you know what I mean, first, and who knows? So I'm just appreciative that I did get to play for Doc.
What was it like being after leaving the Celtics, like before becoming the Laker, your career after leaving Boston? Like once you become a Boston Celtic and you win champions there, you become a legend in Boston. And you kind of become a staple in that community. And some players don't want to leave. Paul was able to stay. And I thought you was one of those guys that would finish their career in Boston, one of those Boston Celtics Hall of Famers. What was life like after leaving, you know, the Celtics before getting to the Lakers?
To be honest, it was so crazy you said that shit. I was just talking about that like 3 days ago, maybe two. It's certain ways to look at it. You know what I mean? Like I look at, you know, guys like a Dirk, you know, who lived in Dallas his whole life, you know, you know, other players who played their career at one place. It's like when I was young or when I was playing the game and I was living in Boston, I felt that way. I was like, okay, this could be, you know, some shit Tim Duncan did, players like that. But at the end of the day, like I said, once I was traded, being able to live in different cities, man, like I'm enjoying it. What that life experience, like now I figure out where I want to live. I played in the best cities in the world and got paid to do it. So it's like, shit, you know, I'm enjoying life. I'm glad I didn't stick in Boston, you know, my entire career. You know, I lived there for 8.5 years. I got to experience that. Now I get to experience living in Sacramento. Amazing time in Sac. I had some wild shit going on in my basement downstairs in Sac, which, you know what I mean? I had interest in life. That was fun. It was a dope experience. Like I said, so I was, you know, that perspective, like living in Chicago, you know, I lived downtown. In the triangle, like, you know, that type of lifestyle, condo living, that was fun. You know, the city of New Orleans was different. Like, I drove an hour every day to practice in New Orleans, you know what I mean? Just because I'm really particular about where I live in my home. Like, that has to be my happy place when I leave the arena or practice, wherever the place may be. Like, I told you I'm a homebody, so my career got to be, you know what I mean, like, a lovely place and enjoyable, you know, great vibes type of feel. So, I love it, you know what I mean, being able to experience the different cities and different climates and enjoy life. So I don't look back at it or regret it. You know, shit could have went differently, but it's all about perspective for me. And like I said, I'm trying to figure out where I want to live the rest of my life. But living this type of lifestyle and understanding, like I said, I've got to experience so many different cities. My mind is thinking differently now.
How was it playing with Boogie and AD?
Whew. Two of my favorites, yo.
That's what I want to know.
Two of my favorites, yo. As y'all seen, you feel my career now. I've been trying to play with them too the last 4 or 5 years, yo. They wanted one and two of the best to do it in the game. And
I call them Tim Duncan and David Robinson on steroids. That's what I call them too, especially when they was in New Orleans.
I'm telling you. Man, listen, when I got with them in New Orleans, I thought I had it figured out. I thought I had a blueprint to success. We was going to shock the world with that group, yo.
Yeah, I believe it. I believe
we had a big three, and what was so dope about that is at first, you know, Cuz and AD, you know, they both would try to go get 50, and I'm like, Cuz, nigga, you could damn near have a triple double with this lineup. You know what I mean? Like, let AD get to 50, you get 15, 15, and 20. You know what I mean? Like, kill it that way, and then you got Drew in the pick and roll that you can't fuck with. You know what I mean? So it's like, nigga, we got a baby big a a monster big three over here that niggas ain't even, they sleeping on. Like I said, if we would have to get Golden State in the playoffs with Cuz, AD Andrew, come on, man. How the fuck they gonna match up with that? Because you got to put Draymond on Cuz.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know what he trying to do, but he bully basketball. So we get that nigga in foul trouble early. Then like I said, who gonna check AD?
Y'all was missing Matt Barnes, Ron Artest, and Steven Jackson. Y'all was missing that three guard that could defend and shoot. Y'all had everything else. You, Drew, Boogie, and AD. Y'all just needed that three guard.
I don't even need to be on the court. Them three on the court, you can't stop them. You put them in a C action, you put Cuz the elbow with the ball. Now he making a play. Yeah. Drew pinned down for AD. Like, what you going to switch? Like,
Pick your poison. You can't stop everything. How tough knowing, you know, obviously Kentucky ties, but then just being a good dude, you got a chance to play with him in Sacramento. I think Cuz is so misunderstood. How tough is it for you as a brother seeing him go down when he finally got into position? He was up for $200+ million that year, and y'all had a hell of a team. What was that like to you as a brother just seeing him have to go through all that shit?
It was sickening, and then the disrespect on his name. And
man.
You know, even to this day now, it's like, y'all, this nigga can arguably be the best in the game. Y'all, I don't know if like you niggas seeing like when he gets the ball, like, or what you scared of, but he a great dude, yo. You know what I mean? Like, if you know, some people are like that. If he smell blood, he gonna eat. But you know, if you stand up for yourself or you speak up, he gonna respect that. You know what I mean? Understand that. Okay, cool. I understand where you're at. But if not, you know, people, you know, are intimidated by his dominant presence and his demeanor. But like I said, you get to know the man. He's one of my favorite teammates of all time. I love playing with him, and I think he's one of the best to ever do it, yo. I hated that he went down back to back injuries like that. And like I said, just even like I said, those two with them two, they could change the game back to where niggas looking for big mans. Because we can stretch the floor all we want, but shit, the game is one of the paint. I mean, that motherfucker, you can't stop him. He gonna demand.
I'm saying this now. Boogie Cousins, comeback player of the year. Watch.
If he's healthy,
he gonna fuck it up down there. I already know that 1,000%. Ain't nobody. He's gonna demand a double for sure. So I'm glad he got another shot.
Yeah, I mean, I say to be honest with you, we could go back and forth, but as far as skilled centers, he's probably the most skilled big man we've ever seen. There was not a hole in his game from the block to the 3-point line. There wasn't a hole. He had everything.
You know what I love about that motherfucker, boy, is when we played Sacramento. When I was stuck with him, you know, before every game was a big man we had to play against, he'd be like, "Nigga, I'm about to fuck this nigga up." I'd be like, "Ooh, I can't wait to give you the ball, big fella."
I love to hear that.
Like, he wanted. He was like, "Nigga, I'm ready to fuck all them other bigs they talking about that was cool." I ain't gonna say no name, but he was fucking them all up, yo, and they know that. Them niggas was friendly. Niggas was getting thrown out the game because they don't play against this nigga, man. He was an animal. Like,
They were scared of him. Listen, watching film back.
When, like I said, I told you how, like, I watched myself, then I used to watch Cuz when I was in SAC. Man, that nigga, the shit he used to do, like, on film that you didn't even see, unreal, yo. He reminded me a little bit of KG, you know what I mean? Like, he might, you know what I mean, boom, like, give you one of these, you know, off the rebound, a nigga ain't saying nothing. Like, he was a bully, yo. He could back it up with his game. He'd go get you 50 and 20, like, easy.
That's what I'm saying, but like you said, don't sleep on how good he could pass the motherfucking ball. He could really average a triple double. That's how good he
is. He gonna demand a double. He can throw one hand wrap around any pass you name it, and he can bring the bitch off the glass. Give me the ball. He'd be like, "All right," but I used to have to let him bring it up the court. Like, he was too good not to me trying to, like, okay, let me go get the bar at time. Nah, he got it. I got to get out of the way. I got to run the flow. Let me try to set a step up or something. Shit, let me get involved. But he could play, yo. He has some moves. Yeah. That boy could play.
Yeah, man, I hope, you know, for all of, you know, for his sake, but definitely coming from all of us, man, I hope he has a healthy bounce back year, because he was, it was sad the way the game was taken from him at the point of career where he was at. You know what I mean? He was still young. Like I said, he was on the brink of $200 million. Never get the $200 million back. But I think at the end of the day, he just wants to play. He just wants to be healthy and have a chance. And hopefully he'll have that in Houston, man. So if you see this, you big, ugly motherfucker, good luck.
That's my boy, though.
I love Boogie. I had a chance to play with him in Sacramento, man, and it was almost like I was a cousin whisperer. Like, they would come to me because Rondo knows he don't really fuck with respect too many people. But when he respects you, he'll listen to you. So I'm sure Rondo had his ear, but I had his ear too. So it was me kind of like, because Jack, you know me and you, like, for me to have to try to calm down you or you to try to calm down me, just seeing his young fire was like us in Golden State. So me just trying to, you know, maneuver him through the technical fouls and you don't need all this. Facts. And let me handle this and let me get in trouble for you. Like, let me. But he was figuring it out, man. And I really think, you know, it's sad how quick people forget. But then, like you said, the disrespect put on his name because he was the coldest big in the game when he was healthy.
Yep. No question.
Ending up in Los Angeles. What was that process like for you? And from your early days, did you ever think you would be a Laker?
I didn't think I'd be a Laker, but at the time, yo, I had two teams called. So shit, I mean, I had no other, you know, what was my option?
One of them.
Who was the other team?
Different.
Who was the other team?
I think it might have been New Orleans at the time.
Okay. New Orleans at the time.
Man, that's straight. Nigga, like, oh, you went to Laker? Yeah, nigga. Hey, offer me some money. What are you talking about? What you trying to do? The league trying to get me out of here. What you want me to do?
Straight up.
Hell yeah.
What? I got all my niggas out here. I'm trying to figure it out. Shit, so.
That's how I go. That's just how I go.
Right. Yeah.
Quick turnaround. You going into your 15th year. Where's your body at? Where's your mind at? You guys literally just finished, 2.5 months ago, and you guys start soon. Where's your mind at mentally and physically?
Man, I feel great. I'm locked in. Like I said, I'm down in A, and I'm on it. Like I said, I got the game plan, watching a little bit of tape as far as offensive sets they want to run this year. So I got to figure it out quickly, you know what I mean, how to manipulate the game and who to put people in certain spots. So I'm enjoying the process so far. It's different, yo. The game is different now. Like, this league shit, how we got this COVID testing. And we got the schedule so crazy. Like, we can't even interact with our teammates for the most part in the locker room. You know, it's like we're in groups of four right now. And, you know, you got training table, you got weight room, court, get your ass out. Mm-hmm. Straight like that. You know what I mean? Ain't no sitting around the locker room talking to the guys, getting to know one another. They trying to get you out of there. And we in the locker room with masks on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Talking. So it's a little bit different. You know, still trying to maneuver how to – you know, get the chemistry and the camaraderie with guys. We taking 4 buses this year. You know what I mean? It's like only a certain amount of people on a bus at a time. So it's like,
that's crazy.
You know, we all have to adjust and adapt to it, which would be fine. But, you know, it's different. And I'm just kind of like, just adapt and enjoy the process, getting settled, learn the system. But, you know, it is what it is. Like I said, I feel great. And what's even satisfying is we've been doing a couple of full court drills, you know, here and back and forth. And what I pride myself on now is like, I never get a drink. So it's fulfilling to see a couple of the young guys over there, you know what I mean, gassing for air a little bit and get water and shit. I'm like, okay, I'm all right. I'm 15, I'm 34. These niggas 22. I'm all right.
If the drug testing was like it was now, man, we could have played all year round.
Easy.
All year round. I don't need a break. Right. Long as I can burn it down, I'm ready all year round, my nigga. Silly. Let's go.
Hey, well, I did. Like, I burned it down my whole entire career. But it's funny because I took pride in being the most in shape people. If you look back when I played, like, I was always top 10 in miles during the season because my game was running and I loved to run. But I knew I had to bust my ass in the summertime because I was going to smoke that much weed to get me through the season. And I need, because to me, it wasn't really the alcohol. It wasn't the pills, but fuck my stomach up. So I knew I had to go above and beyond my cardio so I could burn my tree during the season. Straight up.
Yep.
What were those experiences like? I've removed myself, obviously retired from basketball. I don't miss playing at all, not one bit. But you touched on something. Kicking it in the locker room most of the time after practice was some of the funnest times of my life. Just sit there, talk shit, ice. Sometimes you stay in that bitch for 2 hours just talking shit with someone and laughing the whole time. That's like, no bullshit, that's one of the things I miss is just that locker room time. And like you said, with COVID, obviously it's not the same feeling, but touch on how just fun them locker room times were with, you know, you could just had a hell of a practice or a tough ass game sometimes.
I mean, like you said, I can't remember good enough. Yo. That's the best times, yo. Even, like I said, me playing with so many different teams, yo, all the guys, the chemistry, the fun times were in the locker room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it was before the games or after practice, it was a lot of crazy things. And that's a funny story that comes to mind. when you said that. So
I was about to say, there's so many stories that all the funnest stories come from the motherfucking locker room. Trust me.
Listen, we in New Orleans a couple of years back, and we got some gamblers on the team. We gambling or whatever throughout the
what
season.
What team? What team were you on?
I'm in New Orleans. I'm with the Pelicans. Okay. I'm with the Pelicans. No, so we're actually in so what happened was we had a delay. The arena had a leakage in it. So we're sitting in our uniform in the locker room and it's a delay. So I'm like, shit, let's get it in. Niggas owe money, whatever. So let's get it in right here. So we all in uniform, but they got us sitting in the locker room we got to wait an hour and how to play the game. I'm like, man, play the game for it. You want us to sit at, we first of all warmed up. They stopped it so we couldn't go out. I'm like, you want us to sit in the locker room for an hour and a half and then go play a motherfucking game? I'm like, yeah, okay, cool, whatever. So we sitting there for whatever, chilling. Anybody doing that? Okay, cool. I'm like, fuck it, man, bring the cars out. We end up getting the cars out, gambling right there before the game. Mind you, we didn't play the game, but it was like this. We got it in. We picked out the cards. Like I said, this team shit, we was vibing, put the music on, whatever.
Hell yeah.
Our general manager came in there, and he was like, y'all playing? We was like, nah, we ain't playing, nigga. Fuck you talking about? Like, none of that. Y'all on some slave shit right here. Nah, we ain't gonna just sit now. You gonna go out here and fuck ourselves up? We just sit for 2 hours, cold hour, and then we gotta go out and play full sprint? Nah, it's over. So we end up gambling, getting it in. It was funny. Like I said, it was a good time. We laughed about it to this day, and that was one of my fun locker room times.
I can imagine you, T.A., Big Baby, KG, Perk, and Paul are in the same locker room, dog. That's comedy.
That's classic.
That's comedy.
Me and KG got into it bad in the locker room once they had to practice too, though. Buckets of water throwing at each other, tackling each other. We got some crazy moments too in the locker room. So that's where it all go down.
That made y'all closer, though. All right. All that shit.
Battle-tested. All right, man. We down to quick hitters. Just first thing that comes to mind when they ask these questions. Who's one player you haven't played with that you wish you could have got or would like to get a chance to play with?
KD.
Ooh, motherfuckers are in trouble this year, man. I didn't see film on KD in the summertime because he was playing in my homeboy Rico Hines runs. Mm-hmm. KD is back.
Yeah, he a problem. Shit easy. And he can do it on both ends, so shit.
Yes. Man. Yes, sir.
You and four other players to go to the blacktop and run the court all day. What four players you picking?
The outdoors.
Because Avery Bradley,
of course, the mosquito.
I'm gonna go with Drew. Drew Holiday.
Lord, they not scoring on y'all for sure. Them two motherfuckers, Avery, and Drew.
Who my forward? I'm out. Just fuck with KG.
Oh my god! That's y'all definitely gonna win all day.
So you, Bradley, KG. Drew and Boogie.
We're going to blacktop.
Y'all gonna win one way or another. You most likely gonna win on the open clothing. But y'all gonna have a great chance of winning in a scrap too if it come down to it.
Yes, sir.
Right now for you, top five artists. So who you listening to the most?
Lil Baby, J. Cole, Drake, and 21.
Yeah. Mm. 21.
This kind of leads me into my next question. You've been name dropped by several artists, Wayne, J. Cole, Pusha, Tyga, Trey, to name a few. What's been your favorite name drop thus far?
Maybe Jeezy. He had one. I mean, there's a couple of them that I like that's they're old now. They're old as shit now.
they still dope though. That Jesus was hard. Ron dope.
What was it like hearing? You're a kid from Louisville, Kentucky. What was it like hearing dudes you look up to in a whole nother space talk shit about you?
But Matt, one of the famous lines all rappers say, "I keep a nine on me like Rondo." That's their favorite line.
That's their favorite. All that green on me, whatever. So. Mm-hmm. It's unreal, yo. It's dope how much love I get, especially in our community. You know what I mean? When I'm out in the clubs, wherever I go, niggas love me, and it's you be respected and loved by your peers like that. Being where I'm from, like I said, it's this dope feeling, and being able to be mentioned in so many rap songs. Now, like I said, my kids get a kick out of it. And he's like, it's dope. It's dope to have that, you know, that experience to be a part of something as far as our rap history.
Favorite point guard battle?
D-Rose.
Ooh. D-Rose. The Rose. God. Two-point guards.
His rookie year? Go, is that nigga 7 games? Problem.
Both ends.
Straight up.
Can you compare a prime time D Rose to anyone you've ever either played against or seen? Can you compare him to anybody?
Nah, man, anybody.
See, I was about to say you can't.
Anybody fucking with him like in the 7 games when he was out there? Boy, he putting your ass in trouble. You on your heels the whole game, And ain't no one person in front of him. You got a whole scouting portal on him for sure. That's how we have.
Pack the paint.
And he's still getting there and jumping over everybody.
He's still going to get in there. But then he can hit that little one dribble pull up too. He's hitting that too. He's hitting threes when he's rolling. Like, he was a problem.
He was too explosive, yo. I mean, he was a for sure one man fast break every night. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. 5 dinner guests, dead or alive?
Pac. Mm-hmm. Biggie. Mm. Jay-Z. Oprah. My mom.
That's gonna be a dope one. That's gonna be a dope one. You got some warriors and some entrepreneurs at the table, and 2 queens. You can't lose. Who do you want to see on All the Smoke? Whatever your answer is, you have to help us get this guest on.
Josh Smith.
Oh, that'd be a good one.
Of course, man. I seen him recently. I told him I wanted to have him on the show.
You know, that'd be a good one. I like that.
Yeah, cool with that.
Hey, Atlanta guy too. So, you know, he here in Atlanta too, at Matt, so we can get him.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, something that just came to my mind just while we were doing these quick hitters, and I wouldn't be me if I didn't ask it. What's the deal with you and CP3?
What's the deal with us?
Yeah. Like, to me, like, not – I don't know you, played against you a long time. I'm getting to know you now, knowing CP. CP's an acquired taste, but I see a lot of similarities as far as the way you guys manage the game and think and are leaders, but you guys just butt heads, and sometimes that shit happens.
They both too damn smart. That's what it is. You think you smart. I'm smart, nigga. I'm the smartest point guard in the game. No, I am.
But now I'm going to punch you in the face because I think I'm smarter.
Nah, listen. Hey, I ain't got no problem about it, man. I just love to compete. You know what I mean? Obviously, he does as well, and we just go at it. You know, it's nothing. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like it's personal. That situation happened. You know, obviously, the heat of the moment. But I just try to go at him every time I can. And that's just any point guard I play against. There's nothing particularly about like I'm getting elevated in the game for him and shit. I'm trying to fuck everybody up. So it is what it is.
That's between the lines. That's what goes on between the lines.
I mean, that was a throwback basketball to me. I mean, me and Jack, that's me and Jack's speed. So when I seen it, I was like, okay, I like this.
He's clever. You know what I mean? I watch him play and understand.
Oh, he's dirty too now. That's my boy, but he one of the dirtiest motherfuckers in the game. I got to say that. That is my boy. I fight for CP, but he is one of the dirtiest players ever in the NBA, dog. Hands down.
CP3. Hey, man, well, that's a wrap. Thank you, Rajon, for your time, man. Congratulations on the win. Hope you enjoyed the offseason and good luck in Atlanta. Jack, hell of a show.
Good job, bro.
You can catch this on Showtime Basketball YouTube or the iHeart platform Black Effects. We'll see y'all next time.
Peace.
Right,
this is All the Smoke, a production of the Black Effect and iHeart Radio in partnership with Showtime.